Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today the interview is going to be with Russell Brown. Now, I met Russell at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2016, actually our first year, when we were privileged to show his feature film, Search Engines. And I got to tell you, Search Engines always struck me as just one of the better feature films I've seen on the festival circuit. And besides that, besides being good, I guess it was the fact that it was such a good script and Russell such a devoted filmmaker. His cast would blow you away. We're talking Connie Stevens, Jolie Fisher, Natasha Wagner, Daphne Zuniga, Barry Watson, and a bunch of other people you'd recognize. So if there was ever a filmmaker who deserved to walk into the Sherman Oaks Film Festival and act like he owned the place, it would have been Russell. But guess what? Russell showed up and was one of the nicer filmmakers you're ever going to meet. So we kept in touch via email for the last couple years, and it finally popped in my head, wait a minute, you haven't done a podcast. So he came over, and we recorded this great interview. But before you hear the interview, I just have to tell you that Discover Indie Film is this podcast where we interview filmmakers from the festival circuit, and it's also now the Discover Indie Film TV series on Amazon Prime Video. 10 half-hour episodes, 26 short films. It's a great binge if you love indie film. And now, instead of begging you to go to discoveryindiefilm.com and watch great shorts one by one, you can just go to Prime Video, sit back, and have them play for you without you bothering to click anything. And while we're talking about Prime Video, the film I mentioned, Search Engines, that Russell Brown directed, is on Prime Video right now. I think it's on iTunes and Amazon Prime Video. So if you go to discoveryindiefilm.com, there will be links to his feature film because, you know, if you're an aspiring filmmaker, Search Engines is definitely a film you should watch. Okay, let's talk to Russell. Well, and I know it was at the very end of your run. I don't know if
that's true. It's still going.
Really?
Yeah, I went to a festival last month in Bozeman, Montana. And it was, I have friends.
Which is actually a fantastic town.
Yeah, that's why I went. I have a friend that's, two friends. One friend that grew up there, another friend that lives there now. And I was like, I'm just going to go to Bozeman. Why not?
Yeah, it's a college town, right?
Yeah, and it's beautiful. So, you know, it's Montana. It's gorgeous. So I went to
Montana is gorgeous. I think a lot of people associate it with Dakotas and whatnot, which might be gorgeous too, but
yeah,
Montana's a beautiful place.
No, it was really super nice.
So you're still doing festivals 4 years later?
Or yeah.
3 years later?
Yeah, it's still playing festivals.
Well, before you tell me about that,
yeah,
what I always ask is your history, because, you know, to get a film like Search Engines put together,
yeah,
I mean, I think it's a very impressive movie.
Yeah.
I was always impressed with that movie. Besides how well written it is, I think he did a great job directing it. And then, obviously, very few indies cast as well as you did.
Yeah.
But, so I was curious about what got you to the point that you were even able to do that.
To make that movie.
Yeah, like did you start in film in school? Did you?
Oh, yeah. Well, you want to go all the way back?
Go back to...
All the way back to
tell
birth.
Tell me when, yeah. Like, what age? Age 5, did you pick up your first handy cam?
No, I mean, I was making, films in high school and stuff like that. Uh-huh. And writing about movies more. And then I went to film school. But I went to film school because I wanted to be really, a scholar. I was not really interested in being a filmmaker. I was really interested in being a critic or a scholar.
Like the film studies side of it.
The film studies side. That's really what I wanted to do. But then I was working all through film school, and I worked... And I got a job right out of film school working as an assistant at Paramount, and then I became a junior executive for
Film school?
USC.
USC.
Yeah. And so I was working for Saturday Night Live as a junior development executive, and then I came back to LA because they moved me to New York, and I worked for a producer named Laura Ziskin as a development executive also, and I was her junior executive on Spider-Man, the first one. And then... And then I stopped doing that, and I made a documentary, which was about the oldest blues club in Los Angeles. It was a blues club that had been operating since the 50s on Central Avenue. And I made that movie, and that premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival, and I sold it to public television. At this point, I'm 24.
Something. I was going to say, yeah, so you're fresh out of school.
Yeah.
You have this, what many would... A lot of people be envious of your career up to that point. If that's where it ended, it sounds pretty fantastic.
I know. It was, it sounds weird, but I was actually just really kind of going with what kept happening. And I was just enjoying all those jobs, you know, like I liked working for those companies and I liked doing that kind of work. So it was,
yeah, and the development thing, you were reading a lot of scripts.
Yeah, I was reading scripts and I was just earning a living, but it was, you know, work that was fun. Yeah.
And you were learning even more than you did in school about how the business works and production offices.
Yeah, obviously. And meeting people and yeah. having a network.
And you were just inspired. Were you inspired by documentary for a long time, or did you learn about this club and think it deserved a documentary?
No, I loved this club. I loved it. And I just really, I just so wanted to make a film about it. Mm-hmm. And so I actually started working on that film while I was working for Laura Ziskin. And then I sort of left that job to finish the movie. And then that just kind of segued into writing my first feature. So Search Engines is my fourth narrative feature. And so, you know, all three of the movies before that all had, you know, festival play and they were all distributed and they all, you know, came out theatrically. And
yeah, so, and we're talking early 2000s, mid to mid 2000s.
Yeah. Like Race You to the Bottom, which is the first feature, came out in 2005. And then,
which was a great era because you still had Blockbuster and you still had,
yes, the, it was very different.
The world was much friendlier towards
indies,
indie film.
Yeah. And the companies and the distribution companies were, I think, a lot more, it's funny to say this now, because at the time everybody thought they were kind of cruddy.
They're the worst assholes
but
ever.
Now they're really bad. But I mean, because the money really is so much tighter, yeah. But I think, you know, I guess I was lucky to get the tail end of that when there was still a lot of money being paid for advances and stuff like that, because my first films did well. So yeah, that was just, and so just, I guess to come back to your
and
question.
And by the way, what genre, were they various genres or?
Yeah, they were all sort of like Search Engines. I mean, Search Engines is just, I wouldn't say it's a comedy and I wouldn't say it's a drama, you know, it's sort of a dark comedy, but it's really sort
it's
of
a little dark. There's a little bit of manipulation in it.
Yeah.
But also I was just going to add a compliment, which is, I mean, for the era you're talking about, to not be, you know, thriller or horror and have a series of successful releases, I think says something about the quality.
Yeah.
Cause you could have a bad horror movie sell into Blockbuster.
Yeah.
But you couldn't get, you know, a bad smart film full of wit and character.
Well, what I always tried to do.
Back.
Yeah. I mean, like with Search Engines, you know, I always try and sort of fit it into something that's kind of recognizable. So like Search Engines is a holiday movie. But it's just a play
That's
on a holiday
true. It is
movie.
A family. It is the family holiday film.
Yeah. And like Race You to the Bottom was sort of a romantic comedy, LGBT romantic comedy. But mm-hmm. there was a twist on it. So these movies like try and play on something that's recognizable. So it's you're not kind of. I mean, I think Search Engines would have been a kind of a different movie if it had just been set at a dinner party where the same
right.
thing happens. You know, the fact that it's happening at Thanksgiving gives it something that everyone can sort of like hook into immediately.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So you're having successes with indie features.
Yeah.
And you're even getting advances, you said? Like you're
on the sales.
On the sales.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're learning the business side of film because, boy, I know a lot of people who made one indie feature in that era.
Yeah, there's a lot of oners out there.
There's a lot of oners. Well, because they either lost money or maybe broke even or just, you know, the distributor made money and the filmmaker didn't.
Right. There's a lot of that out there. But I think, like, I think there is a thing. I've just noticed this over the years. And, you know, I don't mean to be, like, discouraging to people about making films or anything. But, like, you know, being a oner to me is a little bit like, it's a little bit just, I don't know. It's
like you went to a stand-up open mic night once.
Right. I mean, I think making your first film is fun and great. And a lot of people just do one. I mean, I think the people that I know that are sort of my colleagues or my peers that are filmmakers, you know, they just keep going. They figure out a way to keep going.
Yeah.
And even if it's tough and they're not making a lot of money or the, you know, the economics of the business change, they just figure out a way to keep making films or to adapt filmmaking to whatever they can earn a living doing. But that sort of like species of kind of films that are out there where it's people just made their first one and then just like drifted away. I think it muddies up the marketplace and the world for a lot of people who are committed their lives to doing this.
It could. I always told people if you can quit, you should.
Yeah.
Because if it's in you at all to quit, then that's a pretty good indication that you should do something else.
Yeah. I mean, I guess there's a lot of one-time novelists, and there's some examples of one-book people that wrote great books their first time out, and maybe it's the same thing with filmmaking. But I think there's a lot of, for some reason, filmmaking does attract a culture of amateurism a little bit.
Well, in theory, it almost has to. I mean, in defense of the films that a film festival will never show, but believe me, I see a lot. I watched the first 15, 20 minutes of a lot of features, and I just admitted that I stop at 15, 20 minutes. If you're going to screen it.
I've been on screening committees for festivals, and I've screened for other festivals before, and it's sort of like, 20 or 30 minutes in, I'm like, I can tell this, whoever made this didn't take it seriously.
Yeah.
So why should I?
Yeah. Didn't have the ability, or it's just not there. And you certainly know it's not going to be programmed. You know you're going to show something else.
Yeah. And it makes me a little angry that my time is being taken by something that someone else didn't take time to sort of.
But unlike a novel where someone can write it, show it to friends.
Yeah.
If they have a connection, they can get it to someone at a publisher and get rejected. Yeah. No one knows.
Right.
Whereas, the festivals.
That's true.
The stuff that you've seen on a jury and the stuff that I see on a jury.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess who would make a film and then just say like, well, I guess this one goes in my top drawer. It's not good enough for the role because it's, sometimes people do improve.
Yeah.
But unless you had a really good film school program or something, I'm having a hard time thinking of, how do you know if, I've seen a lot of people's first films be unimpressive, but
yeah. No, and then no, but I think if your first film is unimpressive, but you're passionate about doing it,
yeah,
you want to keep going.
True.
I'm talking about people who sort of like, oh, I wrote this one thing, and there's a lot of like one script people in the world too. Like,
yes,
I wrote this one script, or I made this one movie, and I'm just gonna give it a shot, and if it doesn't work, I blow $100,000 on a movie, and it's kind of like. That attitude just bugs me.
Oh, yeah. The people who write one script and then they spend the next 5 years doing polishes of it instead of writing something else.
Yeah, just like, I get a lot of, I actually made a movie about this. So it's kind of, a movie called my second feature, The Bluetooth Virgin, is about giving telling your writer friend the truth about what you think of a script.
Really?
That's the setup of the movie. And I think, I do get this every now and then where someone's like written this one script and I just am like, if it's a lark, why take my time and your time? And
yeah, I know. I feel you. I'm with you 100%.
Yeah.
And I always hated the film school. I'll say guys, but I should just go genderless pronoun.
Yeah.
The film school people who say, I want to make a truly great film.
Right.
And you're like, about what?
Yeah.
Like, you don't have an idea. Your idea is to do something good.
Right.
Like, it's actually based on ideas.
Yeah. No, I had a meeting with somebody recently where it was sort of like that. Like, I liked this person a lot, but, it was all about sort of career ambition and not about what it is you want to say.
Yes.
And so that just, I don't know how to talk to a person like that because I can't.
Oh my God. I remember having friends who would reveal themselves. They'd say, they'd be screenwriters and want to direct a film, and they'd say, what I really want is a office on a studio lot.
Right. That's kind of what I know. This is exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, I assume that your distaste for that kind of ambition is why you're a real filmmaker.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's, I guess it's sort of distaste, but I guess I'm just sort of drawn towards people who are, if somebody says to me, like, I got to make this movie, like, this is so important to me and,
yeah.
That
was you with your first documentary, for
totally,
sure.
Totally, 100%.
Yeah.
And, like, that is very attractive. And I think, like, when you're talking about, for example, we were just talking a second ago, how did the cast come together for search engines?
Yeah.
We're making a very low-budget movie. It's a SAG ultra-low-budget movie. No one's going to get rich off this movie. you know, and you're talking to people who work consistently, you know, and so I'm, you know, I don't remember the meeting, but I'm sitting in a meeting with Daphne Zuniga or Connie Stevens or whoever, these people who really don't need this movie for their careers or money. And, you know, I think they react well. Artists react well to other artists being passionate about things. So that's how that cast comes together.
Exactly. So it was really meetings with you where they,
yeah,
more and, flattery, but they said, okay, this is a director I want to work with.
Or this is a project. This is somebody cares about this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I will lend my talents to it for a reduction in what I would usually probably earn for the amount of time I'm going to spend on it because, you know, I'm on board with this person's passion. And that is what will get more people involved, you know, in your project or, you know, higher level talent. And I think that works at all levels, you know, even if you're making $20 million movies and an actor usually gets paid a huge amount of money and the scale doesn't work for that movie. The passion thing really is important.
It must be.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking to myself how few people probably truly have it.
Right. I mean, it's, yeah. I mean, I also like, there's a lot of casting directors who, I just have casting director friends and I hear these stories about, you know, they're working with filmmakers who just, you know, they want a certain actor for their movie and it's not right for the part and it's not right for the movie, but it's some sort of other ego thing or money thing that's driving their, you know, reasoning for wanting a certain cast member or whatever. And it's kind of unconvincing, you know, it's like, oh, you want to make this movie, but you're already willing to compromise on your cast because you think it'll be cool to hang out with this actor. I mean, it's icky.
Yeah. I am with you on that. Yeah. I even dealt with, well, this is very editable moment, but yeah, I dealt with a producer who was like, actually shunned bigger names because, and then when you were done with the project, you knew, oh, it's because she was intimidated. She thought she wouldn't be the boss anymore if right. That person was involved. And that person had enthusiasm for the project.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I mean, that's another thing that gets, I think, in the way of a lot of the filmmaking process is this idea of power, you know, and like, I think it tricks up relationships between actors and directors and other members of the crew, whoever, you know, when people are just sort of like into their authority as opposed to kind of turned on by collaboration, which is what turns me on. You know?
And being focused on just, yeah, collaboration for the art itself.
Yes, that's
to create the best product together.
Totally. Like that feeling when I'll just talk about actors, but like, and this is because I think I work really well with actors. I've actually never had, on all these movies, yeah, I've never really had an actor that I didn't like or I didn't like me. I mean, knock on wood, but like, it's kind of never happened. And I think because like, I approach it from this real, like, you know, you're an artist and I'm an artist and our energies and ideas and creativity are going to come together and create. And I'm willing to throw out my ideas as bad if they're bad. And I hope you
you're
will
open
too.
To their ideas.
Totally. I always say to people, like, I'm always in favor of a better idea.
Yeah. Which is how real artists work. One of my favorite stories is always John Cleese, you know, one of the better comedy writers of all time. I saw him do an interview about A Fish Called Wanda, yeah. And there was like a line that wasn't working. And like one of the gaffers threw out an idea and he pointed and said, that's a great idea. Say that.
Totally.
And he didn't care about his words or anything. He was just like, hey, someone who sets up lights just had a good line.
Yeah.
Let's use it.
Well, of course, yes. It happens. That's a great way to work. I mean, I just finished shooting this movie with Jacqueline Bisset. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jackie loved the script that I wrote, loved it, you know, had so much passion for it and just loved the script. And so we're rehearsing it and, you know, she would say things like, you know, oh, would you mind terribly, you know, she's very polite, she's British. Would you mind terribly, terribly? I don't quite understand it. Would you mind if maybe we just talked about it? I was like, Jackie, you can do whatever you want. If you can't do that line, don't do it. Like, if it doesn't work for you, I don't get paid by the word here. We can cut
stuff. And you trust her talent implicitly. So it is
totally.
A But that was, but she's obviously dealt with different types of people. So she was testing the waters. And
we ended up having this fantastic relationship, you know, and still have a friendship now that's really beautiful, I think. But our working relationship was great. And I think it was because of that, you know, I really trusted her experience and wisdom. And, you know, when you're dealing with someone like her and she's been in the business for a long time, you listen when they're telling you something. You've got to listen to when they're telling
you. Are you drawn to sort of classic Hollywood types? I mean, it's a natural question. I'm sure you're asked this one a lot. Like, are you drawn to the Hollywood greats of your youth in a way?
Yeah. I mean, I think so I've worked with many women who are, well, famous Hollywood. You know, I made two movies with Karen Black. I made a movie with Sybil Shepherd. I made this movie with Jacqueline. I made a movie with Connie Stevens. So, like, you know, I do have, I think it's more that I'm writing, I write those characters. I'm interested in those, in women of that age, and kind of, they always seem to show up in my stories. So there's so much great talent in that age range.
An amazing amount of talent.
Yeah. And so I don't know if it's so much
that. And often underserved, but you just naturally write for a female character such as that.
Yeah, those are the characters who sort of show up. And then when you're casting it, you know, if you have the opportunity to, you know, work with somebody like Jacqueline or, you know, Sybil or any of these people, of course it's exciting. They're great storytellers and great talents. And the films and people they've worked with throughout their lives are just my heroes. So but to answer your question, I mean, I don't think I write for them.
Right. Right. You don't have a performer in mind when you're writing.
No.
Interesting. And are you an everyday writer?
No.
No. Just when an idea comes up, you pound it out?
Well, I'm sort of everyday creative. Mm-hmm. You know, like right now I'm editing. So, which is a form of, you know, I'm dealing with dialogue and story. But it's not, you know, I have a, one of my mentors was a writer named Alvin Sargent, who died last month. Mm. And he wrote every day. He was kind of an everyday writer guy. But I'm not like him.
Right. But you're quite prolific. I mean, sounds like it.
Yeah.
I mean, to get this much done.
Well, when I get an idea in my head, it won't, you know, when something starts, I do push through to the end. I am sort of persistent.
Which is another characteristic that creatives have to have.
Yeah.
Because Lord knows there's writers out there of talent who have, you know, 15 unfinished, you know, they have the first act or they have one act of countless ideas.
For sure.
And they never see them through.
Yeah. And sometimes, and this happens, and I totally am respectful for this kind of process too, where, you know, you write the first half of something or 30 pages of something, and then you put it away, and then you come back to it later, like a year or two later, and suddenly whatever was missing or you couldn't figure out is solved. So that happens too sometimes.
Yeah. All right. So Search Engines is your third or fourth feature?
That's the fourth one.
That's the fourth.
Fourth narrative feature.
And, you've done one since?
Yeah. So the Jacqueline Bisset.
Yeah. The Bisset one.
The Bisset one.
Bisset.
Yes. The Jacqueline Bisset vehicle is currently in editorial.
Oh, great. Great.
Yeah. I just shot it. We wrapped.
And then you also
May
have the,
10th.
Is the Liza Minnelli scarves?
So the Liza
Minnelli.
Is that
Minnelli, a documentary? I know you're working with 43 other directors on that.
Yes. Well, that movie. So in between larger movies, you know, I've sort of made smaller short films, and I think kind of what a lot of filmmakers do kind of in between bigger projects. So last year I made two shorts and one feature-length documentary. But the one you're talking about was a short film where I purchased at auction 44 scarves that were owned by Liza Minnelli. And I sent them to 43 friends. And they weren't all filmmakers. Some of them were all types of professions. Some are filmmakers. And I said, make a one-minute movie using your phone with the scarf that somehow suggests a Liza Minnelli metaphor or something about her life, but it can't, you can't, I don't want people in it and I don't want her in it, but it has to be sort of metaphorical in some way. So everyone got this assignment and I got all these things back in. And I didn't know, obviously I didn't know what was going to happen. I just set up some guidelines.
That's a pretty challenging ask, I think, that you're really testing people's creativity.
Totally. Yeah. It was, I think that's why people were attracted to it. Cause it was sort of like interesting, like what to do. And, you know, the movie became, so that was a, you know, the movie became, sort of telling her life story through these scarves and through the imagery that people created with these scarves. And, in a way, I think the movie has some real emotion in it because she's had a really tough life in a lot of ways.
Oh my God. An
interesting
life. Very publicly difficult life.
But ultimately it's a very loving, you know, moving or
right,
loving, you know,
yeah,
movie.
It comes from a good place.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Her fans essentially, I assume.
Yeah. And I just thought, you know, it was really interesting just to use these objects as the
when
way
you
to
bought the scarves, did you have this intention or you bought the scarves and then like the idea came after?
I bought the scarves with the intention of doing this.
There you go.
I bought the scarves.
You're a planner. You have the mind of obviously all these films. You have the mind of an executive producer as well as a producer and a writer and a director.
Well, there
sounds
was,
like
there was this auction happening, right? And it was, there were like 1,000 things in the auction. It was a huge auction of Liza's stuff. And it was really random stuff. You know, it was everything from, you know, used Blockbuster rental card to, you know, stills of her and her mom and all kinds of things.
Her Blockbuster card.
Totally. It was, that was one of the things. You know,
I'm
it was,
sure someone would love to have that.
It was weird ephemera from her. And I was looking at these scarves and, you know, she's, you know, I knew that she'd worn a lot of scarves and I just thought, God, these things are beautiful. Like they're beautiful. And I sort of started imagining how they would move and, you know, they were, each scarf had a personality and I just thought, And then I bought them.
Right.
And they were in lots. So, you know, you would buy 10 here and 18 here and,
right. And you bought them with this project in mind.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I jumped ahead though, because I wanted to talk about search engines.
Sorry.
No, it's my fault. I'm the one who's all over. I brought up the scarf movie too early, but, so search engines was your fourth.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned only 1 and 2. I don't know about number 3.
So the third one, so the first movie was Race You to the Bottom. And then the second movie was called The Bluetooth Virgin.
Yeah.
And the third movie was called Annie and the Gypsy. That was the movie with Cybill Shepherd. And then this is the fourth.
Right. And those on, and the first three, good distribution with video and whatnot, or?
Yeah, the first two had a really good life. And the second one, actually, I just got back. The term ended. So I've sort of been dealing with that again. The third one didn't do so well, actually, but it didn't do well across the board.
was that just because that's when the market started to change?
No, I don't know. I mean, the movie is a very weird movie. I guess I never realized when I was making it how weird a movie it was. I mean, I really like the movie, but it never got a lot of love at festivals or, you know, and I think we sold it based on Sybil's name.
I love weird. Maybe I can catch it somewhere. Cause
I'll send it to you. It's very odd.
Really, I like weird.
It's out there. I mean, I didn't think it was that out there, but apparently it is. So that's what happened with that one. But you know, that's not really the distributor's fault. The distributor was fine to deal with all that movie. They sort of lived up to their obligation and they did it, you know, that was a sort of a much more transactional relationship. The first two movies, I was really working with the distributor on the release and, you know, had meetings and it was a real collaboration to bring those movies out. So.
And then search engines, you finish in.
Finished in 2015.
Yeah.
I think we finished it, something.
Yeah. That's why I saw it in 2016.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
And I mean, it's a very cool film.
Yeah.
And topical. And like you said, a Thanksgiving
holiday
feature.
Yeah.
and I mean, feel free to just say, Jeff, I don't want to talk about it. But you made in by email, you said something along the lines of the distribution has been
that movie.
Because honestly, I thought it was going to, I don't know. I think it's a quality film with a great cast, and it's such a cool, I mean, who's not into the,
I mean,
spoiler alert, but who's not into the, like, no technology, what people do without their smartphones.
I agree. And I think it was a little bit prescient about, like, I think...
Yeah, was it ahead of its time?
A little bit. I mean, I think that dialogue about phone disconnecting, you know, after the movie was finished is when a lot of these things that are happening now started kind of happening, where people are on these no cell phone retreats and putting their cell phones in bowls when they walk into parties. And, you know, there's, I think that kind of consciousness about disconnecting wasn't really around when I wrote that movie. When I wrote the movie in 2013 or whatever it was, 2014, everyone was still high on the possibility and the fun of it. And I think, yeah, I think I was really kind of on that verge, you know, just not that I'm so brilliant, but it was what I was, feeling.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, I was, you know, at the festival, I'm in the position of being a fan of things and thinking, oh man, I want this to like make it a little impact. I want this to like get out there, and between your ideas and the quality it's made and the cast,
yeah,
you know, I was kind of betting on you.
I mean, I was too. I mean, you know, that is, you know, those just that just that particular distributor, you know, I just chose the wrong distributor.
Okay, I don't want you to like.
I mean, I think they're. You know, I had a bad business relationship with them. I had a bad everything with them. I just think I have a very bad opinion of them. And a lot of bad things happened.
Oh, that sucks. I'm sorry to hear it.
It's, yeah, but I mean, that happens. You know, that's like, that's what, you know, it's funny. I think because I'd had good relationships, you know, if I'd had my first film and I had a bad experience, I was a little bit sort of, I just wasn't aware, I guess, of how badly people can act and dishonestly. And I was shocked, and it, you know, and carelessly, and just, it, you know, it wasn't even about the distribution they did for the movie. It was about the business practices.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess there's a sort of nice part of this story, which is that, you know, I ended up getting kind of compensated for all of that. Which, you know, went through a process to get there, but, you know, I'm allowed to talk about it because I specifically took the confidentiality clause out of my settlement so mm-hmm. that I could talk to other filmmakers about this, because I wanted to warn people. People came to me and said, and this happens, you know, when your movie is out there and other filmmakers are looking to sign up with a distributor, you get calls. Especially if you have a record of having made a bunch of movies, or someone sees you on Facebook and you have a lot of people in common. So I wanted to be able to talk about what happened, because I wanted to be able to tell people, like, listen, don't get in business with these people. Like, they're
right. And here are certain warning signs when you're talking to a distributor.
Yeah. And I said to people, like, listen, I'll give you my experience. You may sign up with them and it may be all sunshine and butterflies, but I don't think so.
Well, that's very, and by the way, that's good and generous of you to be thinking of others in that situation, thinking to help people. Yeah, there is no Yelp page for distributors.
Well, it's funny, there used to be.
Oh, really?
It's too bad. There used to be this thing online called Distributors Report Card, and it was sort of like a news group back when they had those.
Yeah, sure.
Where filmmakers were sort of invited. It was a curated group, right? So that people who were distributors, but it was pretty big. There were a couple hundred people in there. And you could read about people's experiences, and it was actually great. I don't know why it ended, but it did.
Yeah. It should have just evolved into a Facebook group or something, like a private Facebook group.
Totally.
I don't know.
It's not too late.
Well, the only thing is now, like, all those distributors are probably gone anyway. Like, the names change so often now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. They do. It does seem like there's a lot of turnover now.
Yeah. Well, now, I don't know. I'm not going through it. I just know people going through it. And now it just seems like the term distributor is just used for someone who facilitates putting it on streaming services.
Correct. That's pretty much what it is.
And sometimes I wonder how much of a service that even is if they're not doing, if you're still responsible for all the marketing.
Totally. I mean, I think, so there are some services out there now called like, I think there's one called Distribber.
Yes.
And what Distribber does, and I haven't done this, I think it's an interesting model where you pay them a flat fee and they basically take your movie through QC and whatever it has to go through to get onto iTunes, to get onto that platform, to get approved for that platform. They help you get through that, and they've already worked out a relationship with these streaming services.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of an interesting way to go if people want to front the money.
Yeah.
And
it's not a ton.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it is paying. It's almost paying for self-distribution.
Yeah.
And then distributor takes a percentage, I think, after that. Right?
I think
it's just the flat fee?
I think it's just the flat fee. That's right. My understanding of it. But, I haven't done it, so I can't vouch for it. But my whole feeling about all of this has changed anyway in a lot of ways. You know, my whole sort of perspective on it. Because, like, there used to be this thing of, like, distribution. You know, once you get the distribution, then it's like, that's it.
Yeah, there's the people that could get it into...
Yeah.
Tower Records, Blockbuster, Walmart, Target.
Yeah.
Sometimes they even did that, you know, 2-week release in like 8 markets thing.
Yeah.
So it had a theatrical run first.
What I tell people now is that, okay, if you're going to make a movie, here's my personal opinion on how you should think about it, which is festivals are the reason you make the movie. And I know that that is not really the common kind of way people think about it. But festivals, first of all, are great. You know, if you go to film festivals, and I'm not saying I don't go to every film festival I get invited to. I just can't. I spend every dime I have and every minute I have traveling. But that is what kind of the art making process is about. You know what I mean? It is about having an interaction and seeing audiences and people react to your work, discussing it with them, having a dialogue with them about it. Seeing people either enjoy it or not enjoy it. And this thing, and I've gone through it many times, and this is just my opinion, but this thing of seeing numbers on a spreadsheet and knowing that, you know, 7,000 people paid to stream your movie on whatever, it is extremely uninteresting to me and, like, not very rewarding from a filmmaking perspective. And I see that that's what actually makes the money. But I sort of tell people when they ask me, like, play the festival circuit for as long as you can, keep sending it out there to festivals, you know, and getting it shown to real people in audiences. Festivals are good for communities. They're economically good for communities. They're good for people. They're good for people to get together and interact. They're good for people to get together and interact around art, you know. I think they're really a positive thing. So I'm very pro film festival. And, like, you know, the filmmakers are obsessed with getting this distribution deal when the prize is to have those moments of connection with people about your work. That's what it is. That's my opinion.
No, I mean, well, as the programmer of 2 film festivals, I mean, what would I enjoy hearing more than what you just said? But also I can see what you're saying, because taking a film regionally, because you said film festivals are great for the community, so that's obviously, and I'm personally a little jealous of those little a film festival in like a smaller town that doesn't have an art house theater, and so the festival's really the community's chance to come out and support, and I hear they often do, and so that is actually, but what I'm picking up on is that a thoughtful festival run can kind of function like a national theatrical release in a way.
It totally can. And in a way it's better because you don't have this pressure of like...
Yeah, you're not four-walling 17 AMCs for 2 weeks.
Yeah, and you know, the company is all freaked out about what's going to happen, and, you know, you're reading these reviews and, like, everybody's... How many people were in the theater? You know, I mean, it's like the stakes are kind of low in a way at a film festival, but... It's just my feelings have changed.
No, I mean, the stakes are what I, you know, it's funny. I think the stakes are awesome for the filmmaker at a festival because, you know, it's really kind of like a free screening.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well,
it's, I mean, it's an entry fee, but then from there, except for some really shady festivals I've heard about, that no one asked the filmmaker right. to, you know, there's no, it's not like the Hollywood rock clubs of the 80s and 90s where it's like pay to play. Like, all right, well, you want to play tonight? Great. Buy 20 tickets.
Yeah.
And then we'll show you, then you can get on stage. It's like, yeah, it's though I imagine there's someone, a festival somewhere where it's like,
I mean,
well, I've heard people getting ripped off with DCPs, actually. Festivals are like, your DCP's no good. We have to have our guys convert it.
Right.
And then it's, you know, like a $300 DCP is $700. And so, oh, I see where they're making their money.
Well, there's all kind of, you know, you sort of get tuned into this kind of thing. You know, it's sort of like, you know, there's the publicity package, right? Like,
oh, yeah, like we're having a, there's a film market night at our festival.
Yeah,
and,
or, you know.
And so if you pay this, you get a booth, you get a table with your postcards on it.
Yeah, or like, you know, if you're playing, you, congratulations, you've been accepted to, you know, whatever film festival, you know, we find that your chances of attracting an audience at our festival are much greater if you buy, you know, a $200 ad in our program book or whatever. And, you know, you begin to get very sort of tuned in to those. But it's kind of easy to weed those out.
Yeah. And just say no to everything.
Yeah, you just say no. Just say, I'm withdrawing.
I got suckered by that, like, back in, like, 96.
Yeah.
I admit, I was the kid in his 20s who was like, oh, that sounds great. What are you going to do?
Well, they do make it sound great. It's not really that crazy. I mean, but it's kind of the way it's presented. You know, if it's presented as sort of like an option versus kind of like a pressure thing, then it's a little bit different. It's great. And one of the things with social media or like platforms like Film Freeway, it's really easy to find or to get introduce yourself or for festivals to find you. And to, you know, I get approached all the time by festivals from places that I've never heard of, you know, but they, you know, the movie shows there. I know it shows there because they ask for all the materials. I see it online, the program, you know, there's all, you could sort of figure it out. And
like, that's for something like search engines. Yeah. That's why search engines is on year three of its festival run.
Yeah. I mean, I had this experience. There was a film festival in Michigan and it was their first year. And, I can't remember what it was called. I can't remember what it was called all of a sudden. I don't know why I can't remember, but it was their first year and it was a small town in Michigan and they asked to see the film. I sent it to them and they wrote me a letter about how much they loved it. And they wanted to show it as their closing night. And, you know, it was their first year and what I consider coming and all of that. So as I said, I don't really travel to everywhere my movies are showing, but I went to that one because this guy who wrote was so nice. And I had the greatest time,
which is similar to when you're having a meeting with an actor, and they're won over by your passion.
Totally,
this programmer won you over with his passion.
Yeah, and it's not like I didn't like roll up and they said it wasn't about me being treated as a king or anything, but I did show up, and they were nice. But the whole event was really nice. You know, they were all excited. The town was really excited about it. It's actually a beautiful theater. You know, they had taken some real care with projecting it nicely. They had a great closing night party. I mean, it was like, I'm so glad I did this. And it was, you know, the first year of this festival, like they really got it together.
Right. And you hadn't even heard of it. They came to you, which is very cool.
Yeah. And so it was sort of, I think that's what, I know this is sort of weird because people think like Sundance, but I think you end up going to Sundance and you feel terrible at the end of the process, and you go to this and you feel great at the end of the process.
Yeah. The worst thing about Sundance is it's that pyramid structure where you keep hearing about the people at the top of the pyramid who went there and came and had the, you know, were the toast of the town.
Yeah.
And there's a whole lot of people who went and played to a semi-empty theater and got no positive feedback and got sent home, and boy, did they spend a lot of money.
Yeah. And I think there's a great, I think Sundance has a great function also, but I just think like, I think there's this sort of dichotomy of like, oh, these small festivals, you know, don't pay attention, you know, only pay attention to the top tier, whatever they call, you know, the Sundances, Tribeca's.
Yeah. Toronto.
Toronto, you know, just focus on that. And I'm not sure. I just don't agree with that.
Yeah, so. Well, and in this new in the new marketplace, I'm not sure those festivals mean all that much to distribution anyway anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you've got a very high-profile movie with a famous actor and people have put millions of dollars in it and you're actually launching it...
Yes. Sundance is a good place for your premiere.
Totally.
But that was something I was always aware of. I went to Sundance for a long time and there were the non-competitive categories where it was just premieres. It was just, you know, studios pretending to be independents, bringing the, you know, the Fox Searchlight type of thing. And they're just premiering it at Sundance to have that cachet.
Yeah.
And, it wasn't even really part of the independent film scene.
Yeah. I mean, I think Sundance is great. I've been to Sundance too. And there's some wonderful work that they do. And
always love documentary.
The movies are really good. I mean, it's well curated. Yeah. All of that is great. My point is just like this kind of like dismissive attitude towards the rest of the film festival world.
Yeah. The Sundance or bust idea.
Yeah. I think is, you know, and this happens all the time. When I'm starting to make a movie, you know, like somebody always goes like, so you're getting it ready for Sundance.
Right.
And I'm always like, part of me always thinks like, no, I'm just getting it ready for the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Which clearly is the way to go. I mean, that's the funny thing is the focus on premieres. And I'm like, oh, please, you don't get a premiere unless you happen to, they've finished and they've logged, you know, they've logged picture and sound and everything's done and they've done the coloring and now they're submitting to festivals and you just so happen to be one of the first, because it's not, you know, unless it's, you know, a Sundance or Toronto, Cannes, Tribeca, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no reason for a filmmaker to save the premiere.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, there is that sort of, I think festivals sort of create a little bit of that themselves by, you know, there's a lot of times when you're applying and it'll say like, what's the premiere status? You know?
Yeah.
And so you do get a little freaked out by like this idea of like, if it's not the premiere, then.
Yeah. Or at least the lull for that community.
Right.
Which, you know, I mean, obviously for us, there's a difference between a film that's played in L.A. 11 times.
Yeah.
And once or twice.
Right. Well, but, for sure. Yeah.
You know, just as far as what we know, you know, as far as audience goes.
But I think that's totally reasonable. I mean, like a festival must cater to its audience and its community. Not cater, but at least have that in mind. And like if you're dealing with an indie movie that's played, you know, a week in the theater and then it's played 7 festivals in LA. Like to me, it's reasonable to not want to show that movie.
It's like, weird to say, okay, it's had its run here.
Yeah. And let something else have a run here.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's actually, that to me seems logical.
Yeah. No, one of the other stranger things I've heard from filmmakers is, everyone was saying no to us.
Yeah.
And then you showed us and then everyone started saying yes.
That's totally true also.
Which
100% true.
Yeah.
100% true. I don't know what that is because festivals, you know, I guess they're supposed to be a little bit blind to that kind of thing, but maybe they're just not. But I've had that happen on multiple projects.
Interesting. Yeah. Cause I'm personally an idealist.
Yeah.
so I'm all about, you know, quality, quality, quality. You know, I don't care who's in it. I don't care what the subject matter is.
Yeah.
If it's brilliant and beautiful, you know, I'll champion it. If the jury doesn't pick it, I'll be like, no, no, no. What about this one? You know, and I get a couple through.
Yeah. I mean, if I was programming a short and I had, and like, I was, you know, evaluating 2 shorts and then, you know, there was one that had played 30 festivals or something. I guess it's just human nature to be like, what's this?
Sure.
Someone likes it.
Right. I guess so. That does make sense.
Somebody out there is watching, you know, so maybe it's just that subtle.
It could be. It could be. Yeah. See, I don't even let myself look at the Film Freeway page until I've seen it at least once. Like I ignore, I don't want to know who's in it. I don't want, you know, I just kind of, you know, that first experience, I want it to be a little pure.
Yeah. You kind of hope that that's the way it's being done, but it wouldn't surprise me if it's not most of the time.
Yeah, well, heck, I mean, there's even that spot for filmmakers to write a letter to the jury.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not going to read the cover letter. I'll read it after. I've seen it. Yeah.
But I also think, like, the thing with these sort of cover letters or reaching out to programmers, like, it's my opinion that this goes back to this passion thing. You know, if you were talking about movies that don't, you know, I hear this too about, like, we didn't get into 10 film festivals and I'm really depressed. Like, I've heard that. And I think, and actually, I'll tell a story. Like, a friend of mine, this happened. He'd worked really hard on this short film and put a lot of money into it. And it said to me, like, we didn't get into the first, whatever, 8 festivals we applied to. I'm really depressed, you know, all this stuff. And I said, you know, how are you doing it? What's your process? And he's like, well, I'm just sort of applying to these sort of bigger ones. And I said, well, first of all, start applying to places that he'd made a sort of a horror, like it was a sci-fi movie. Mm-hmm. Start applying to sci-fi film festivals because they are looking for you. And secondly, write a letter about why you made the movie. Like, just personalize it. Why did you do this? You obviously care a lot about it. Talk about it. Because it was sort of a metaphor of the breakup. The movie was a metaphor somehow of his breakup with his wife. Mm-hmm. And I said, talk about that. And talk about what you went through making it. Like, that's interesting. And if when you go to a museum and you look at a painting, oftentimes there's a story next to it that says, you know, when Rothko painted this, he was going through this. And it contextualizes the work. So do that. And so he started doing it, and now he's like on his, you know, 15th festival, and he's like writing me all these texts about how thanking me and all this stuff.
But that's great.
I think don't be afraid of why.
Well, and honestly, a sci-fi film, Telluride, Sundance, Tribeca, it's not their forte.
Sure, exactly.
I mean, yeah. So there's no reason to be pie in the sky, festival wise, and I mean sci-fi. I wish we got more sci-fi because I always find it so compelling to see. I grew up on Twilight Zone, right? So when someone, although that sounds bigger budget, but when someone is just using their mind and creativity to do science fiction instead of big budgets and effects, I think it's so cool.
Yeah, me too. I mean, sci-fi, like throughout the history of sci-fi, it's always been metaphorical.
Yeah.
And so it's always been about bigger issues.
Yeah. Discussing what you can't discuss in open.
Yeah.
Yeah. You create the metaphor and then all of a sudden you can talk about totalitarianism or abuse or slavery, you know, but you're using a robot.
Totally.
Yeah. There's a movie I want you to see that was in Film Invasion last month super cool movie about a guy, a blind guy with a robot helper in his little apartment. Just shot over in Pasadena in black and white. And it's this fantastic little film.
Oh, I'd love to see that. That sounds really interesting. And I like, I make them and I like chamber movies. So I'm sort of interested in how other people approach it. You know, when you're in sort of a confined space and the sort of shooting strategy and how you keep the narrative interesting and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. There's cool challenges to it.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So you're the king of the festival circuit.
I just believe in it.
Yeah. And when you did your distribution deal, you reserved the right to keep submitting to festivals?
Correct.
Because, a lot of distributors might cut that off.
Yeah. Well, I was very specific about.
Yeah.
So, luckily, because, you know, at the time I was negotiating that distribution deal, I didn't really realize what was about to happen.
Yeah.
But,
even if everything had gone swimmingly well, you wanted to keep.
I wanted to keep those rights.
To keep going around.
Yeah. Any lawyer would always say, well, if they're not going to exploit those rights, keep them. Yeah. So that was honestly probably my lawyer more than me. She probably just said, well, are they going to play it? Why do they want festival rights? What are they going to do with them? And I said, I don't know. So she probably just crossed it out and they just probably just left it out. It may have just been luck.
Yeah, the truth is, every festival you take it to, might lead to people telling friends about it and then them checking it out on iTunes or Amazon or wherever.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope that happens.
If that conversation was half as fun to listen to as it was to have, then you enjoyed that podcast half as much as I did, I guess. I don't know. The math didn't work. But I really want to thank Russell for coming in and doing the interview. He also did 4 questions. That'll be the next podcast episode after this one. You should watch his whole filmography, but go ahead and start with Search Engines. That's the one that won an award at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival a couple years ago. Just go to Amazon Prime or iTunes and look up Search Engines. And it's starring all those fantastic actresses we talked about. Connie Stevens, Jolie Fisher, Daphne Zuniga, Natasha Wagner. And watch it. It's really cool. And I don't know, I think I'm going to try to pull Russell into our little podcast group of filmmakers I bring in like at Oscar time to make their Oscar predictions and stuff, because he's just really cool and fun to talk to. All right, on to other business. Discover Indie Film. It's discoverindiefilm.com. It's at DIF Wins on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. It's a podcast that you're listening to, and it's also a TV series on Amazon Prime. Just search for Discovery Indie Film on Amazon Prime and watch great short films lined up for you to enjoy. And if you love indie film and you're in the LA area, the Sherman Oaks Film Festival is going to be in November. Film Invasion LA is every June. And if you're a filmmaker, submit to those. Go to, well, Without a Box is almost gone, but go to Film Freeway or Fest Home. If there's a submission platform you use, send an email to either of those festivals saying, hey, you should use this platform too. All right, I think I mentioned everything. Did I mention everything? I think I mentioned everything. All right. Thank you for listening.